Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely and lets us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself, so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted. This is the word of the Lord. Please be seated.
Well, in 2020, I have found that there is no shortage of suitors for our attention, from advertising online to logos in every corner of every stadium, of every ball game that you watch, to headlines in newspapers. It seems that everyone wants us to fix our eyes on something. So let me start with a question. In the midst of all that vies for your eyes, what do you fix your eyes on most? Does the glow of a smart screen light your face at night? Maybe it's the fluctuating numbers of the stock market that you can't seem to take your eyes off. Maybe there's a website that you revisit constantly throughout the day to make sure you just don't miss anything. Does your Facebook feed get more time than your family? Or maybe there's a number on a scale that you're so desperate to see that you check every morning. Someone in the first service said, "That's me." Has the coronavirus pandemic pushed you to look more at the challenges of the moment than the promises of God for the future? In the midst of all that vies for your eyes, what do you look at most? I've noticed this increased attention grab of our culture, especially during this season, and it was confirmed for me when I read an article in the New York Times just a couple of weeks ago. The headline said this: in hard times, a barrage of ads promises peace of mind. And look at the picture that went with that headline. It was literally eyeballs and all of these things that we could be looking at. Feel this, be kind to your mind, de-stress, relax in hard times. A barrage of ads promises peace of mind. The author went on to write this: a lethal pandemic and widespread unemployment have coincided with a tense presidential campaign and nationwide unrest. For the advertising industry, that means opportunity. They want your attention. They're ready to vie for your eyes. And the article went on to detail all these different products and the ridiculous claims that the makers of these products would make in order to grab your attention. One of the products in the article was called Moon Pals. Here's a picture of the Moon Pals. And this is the description of the Moon Pals. Online advertisements for Moon Pals, a line of plush toy animals with big, doleful eyes, promise, are you ready for this? Deeper sleep, better cognitive functioning, and reduced anxiety. The company's marketing materials inform potential customers that the arms of the stuffed Moon Pal creatures are specially weighted so they're able to give hugs that can save the world. I didn't know. Wow. They've got my eyes now. I had a child in the first service come up, and I couldn't get my hands on a Moon Pal, but I got one of these weighted stuffed animals, and I gave it to her, and she hugged it. And do you know what she said? She said, "Ouch." There was some sequence on it. I think it got her. I said, "That's the best reaction I could have hoped for." She said, "Ouch. They're saying these hugs can save the world." And she said, "Ouch." In the midst of all that vies for your eyes, what do you look at most? See, this is not the first moment for God's people when competition for attention raged throughout the culture. In the New Testament book of Hebrews, we read about a church that had its attention gobbled up by their circumstances. It's a fascinating book. Typically, we look at the beautiful descriptions of Jesus in Hebrews, which they are beautiful descriptions of Jesus, but we can miss some of the background of what caused the writer to deliver these beautiful descriptions of Jesus. So let me just give you a little background on the people to whom the book of Hebrews was written. Here's their experience. They had experienced a hard struggle with sufferings, public criticism, loss of property. You can read about this all in Hebrews 10, 32 to 34. This experience led to some things happening in this little congregation. It led to people drifting away from the faith. It led to people leaving the church. It led to a crisis of confidence. It also led to frustration with their leaders. And so, what advice does God's word have for people whose attention has been gobbled up by the concerns of the moment? The author of Hebrews starts delivering his answer to this question in Hebrews chapter 1, verse 1. He doesn't waste any time. He says, your attention is on so many other things. Let me show you where it needs to be. He writes this, long ago, at many times and in many ways, God spoke to our fathers by the prophets. But in these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed the heir of all things, through whom he also created the world. He is the radiance of the glory of God and the exact imprint of his nature, and he upholds the universe by the word of his power. After making purification for sins, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high. The author describes Jesus. He describes Jesus with clarity. He describes Jesus with precision. He describes Jesus with conviction right there in the first three verses of the book. He then goes on to deepen the Hebrew church's picture of Jesus by telling them that Jesus is better. And that's really the theme of the entire book of Hebrews. Jesus is better. He says Jesus is better than angels. Jesus is better than Moses. Jesus is better than the ancient priest Melchizedek. Jesus is better than the temple. On and on he goes until chapter 12, he reaches one of the Bible's most powerful words. It's the word therefore. For a long time at the chapel, we've made a big deal. Whenever you see the word therefore in the Bible, you better look back and see what it is therefore. It's a powerful word in Scripture because whenever you see the word therefore, it signifies the opportunity for the readers, the opportunity for the hearers, the opportunity for the church to apply the truth from God's word that they have learned up until that point in the letter. And so we get to Hebrews 12, verses 1 through 3, and we read, therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who, Jesus, consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself, so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted. Jesus is better. Jesus is better. Jesus is better. So look at Jesus. J.B. Phillips famously put it like this in his translation of the New Testament. Our eyes fixed on Jesus, the source and goal of our faith. You see, when we find ourselves frustrated with our present circumstances, fix our eyes on Jesus. When our minds race with anxiety about the future, fix our eyes on Jesus. When we can't find our way through the darkness, fix our eyes on Jesus. This last one I think is especially important in 2020. When the noise around us gets louder and louder, fix our eyes on Jesus. So the question might be this moving forward. Well, how do we do that? How do we fix our eyes on Jesus? Right here in these three verses, and there is a lot more in chapter 12, but we're just going to focus on these three verses. These verses will teach us not only to fix our eyes on Jesus, but how to fix our eyes on Jesus. The first thing is in the first half of the first verse of chapter 12. We are to take a focused look at Jesus. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely. There is something you are going to have to lay aside if you are going to fix your eyes on Jesus. You're going to have to be like one of the horses that we see on Duke of Gloucester Street, right? They have the beautiful horse-drawn carriage rides on Duke of Gloucester Street. And there's a lot going on and all kinds of things that could distract the horse and spook the horse. So they put those things right on the side of the horse's eyes. So the horse has a focused look down Dog Street and isn't going to get distracted. There's something you are going to have to lay aside in order to fix your eyes on Jesus. I experienced this just about a month and a half ago. I participated in something called the Quarantine Challenge. Quarantine Challenge was something that was put on by the people that run the Virginia Capitol Trail. I just discovered this. I don't know how I missed this. Working at the chapel, there is this beautiful trail that runs all the way from Jamestown to Richmond. It goes right by the chapel. I suppose if you live in Richmond, you think it runs from Richmond to Jamestown, but it doesn't. Just here to clear that all up. It runs from Jamestown to Richmond. It's mile zero is actually at Jamestown. And the people that run the Capitol Trail, it's a nonprofit organization, they said if you do the whole Capitol Trail in the midst of the quarantine, we'll give you a t-shirt. Trying to encourage people to get outside, get some exercise, move their bodies in this moment. I thought, I mean, that's all good, but I love a good t-shirt. I mean, I'm in. You say t-shirt, I'm doing it. So one Monday, I drove my bike up to Richmond. I parked my car at the train station, and I started riding down the Capitol Trail back to Williamsburg. About halfway through Charles City, the heavens just opened up and I got rained on. And so I'm looking around, where can I get some shelter from the storm? And as God would have it, I'm passing, right as it begins raining, I'm passing this little Baptist church. And behind the Baptist church, there was a carport, I suppose, for the pastor to park his car there. The pastor's car wasn't there. I thought, I'm a pastor. And I went and hid out under this carport in the midst of this thunderstorm in Charles City. The problem is in a carport, the roof is kind of high. The wind is driving the rain in. So here's a picture of me hiding under the carport. You can see the rain is coming in and my piece of concrete that was dry just kept getting smaller and smaller and smaller. But I made it all the way through the storm, about 45 minutes waiting it out. And then I said, I got to keep going on the race. The only problem is now I'm soaking wet. My shirt is completely soaked. I thought, this is kind of clinging to me. This is kind of heavy. Can I do this, pastor of the chapel? Can I ride shirtless through Charles City? I can't ride with my shirt on. The shirt came off. And there I was riding shirtless through Charles City because it was clinging to me. It was weighing me down. It was holding me back from finishing the race. And then I realized that the real issue is my shoes and socks, which were completely wet, and you're pedaling on your bike, and now it's like I have weights on my shoes. I thought, should I take my shoes and my socks off? You know what the writer of Hebrews would say? Take them off. Get rid of it. Lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely. I'll say it again. There is something you need to lay aside in order to fix your eyes on Jesus. There's something I need to lay aside in order to fix my eyes on Jesus. What is it? Maybe it's a drink you feel like you need every night just to relax. You could lay that drink aside and say, Lord, teach me to pray. Lord, quiet my heart in this moment. Maybe it's some wealth and you're just tracking those numbers and you just think, if I can get to this point, then finally everything will be okay. And yeah, at that point, I will be able to fix my eyes on Jesus. Remember, Jesus said, no one can serve two masters. You will either love one and hate the other, but you can't do both. No one can serve God and money. This is why we give back to the God that has given everything to us, because every week we need a reminder that it's all His, to allow Him to pry our hands open, to lay that wealth aside and fix our eyes on Him. Maybe you need to lay aside your expectations for what this year was going to look like. Maybe to lay aside your expectations of what church is going to look like for the next season. To lay aside our expectations and say, you know what? My expectations have been weighing me down. I need to have a fixed and focused look on Jesus. Maybe lay aside the praise of men. You're living so concerned about what other people might think about you. You can lay that aside. Maybe you need to lay aside the need to be understood. So often, I have this need to be understood. I go, I just need to say this out loud. It's not really helpful, but I just want so badly to be understood. Lay it aside. Maybe you need to lay aside a need for a quick resolution to the complexities of life. I believe to fix our eyes on Jesus, we need to take a focused look at Jesus. I also think to fix our eyes on Jesus means we take a long look at Jesus. Look at the second half of verse 1. Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Run with endurance. The writer is clear. This is not a short race. This is not a sprint. This is going to take some time. You will need great endurance if you are going to complete this race. So your look at Jesus, it can't be a glance. I give this church the benefit of the doubt because I learned a lot from watching this church from afar, but they said something one time and I went, that's not right. So we're going to teach you how to grow in Christ on the go. It doesn't work like that. You can't just glance at Jesus and then keep going. To fix your eyes on Jesus means to take a long look at Him. And that's what we're going to be doing this year in our annual focus entitled Fix Our Eyes. If you want to learn more about it, there are some booklets right in the middle of the foyer as you go out. But we're going to take a long look all the way from September of 2020 to June of 2021. Take a long look at Jesus. We're going to look at things like Jesus the provider, Jesus the healer, Jesus the caller, the one who calls us into relationship with Him, Jesus the teacher, Jesus the evangelist. How does He announce the good news? Jesus the sender, sending us out in a mission. Jesus the forgiver, Jesus at prayer. Jesus is teaching about money, the poor, the family. Jesus is path to reconciliation. What does Jesus think about our doubt? Jesus is identity. And finally, we'll end the year with the challenge, the person of Jesus Christ, His nature, His identity, His calling. See, we have some goals as we take this long look at Jesus. Here are some goals that I hope we can embrace as a church body. I pray, as the senior pastor of this church, I pray that by June, we have a larger picture of Jesus, a clearer picture of Jesus, an actionable picture of Jesus. That means we can apply what we see in Jesus to our everyday lives, a biblical picture of Jesus, a greater desire to share our renewed picture of Jesus with others. You heard Rich talk about our online worship service that we just started this week Like he said, it's easy to share. You copy that link from the webpage, and you know someone that hasn't been to church in the past 5 months, you say, hey, I know this is a difficult season. My pastor keeps saying, worship is vital to human flourishing. If you're not worshiping, you're probably far from flourishing in this season. Why don't you start here? It's a great place to start. Share our renewed picture of Jesus with others. Whenever I'm thinking about teaching themes for the chapel family, I like to talk to people that are a lot smarter than me about it and get some wisdom and some perspective. And I called up my advisor from seminary. He's a great dialogue partner for me. And I was talking about the need to fix our eyes on Jesus. And really, we were talking about having a biblical picture of Jesus, because the depth of the picture of Jesus in the Bible goes so far beyond what many believers have in their mind. And he said this to me, it stuck with me. He said, our images of Jesus tend to be too small, too monochromatic, and too domesticated. Too small, too monochromatic, too domesticated. In addition to all of this, I pray that this will help us be a church that continues to spell Jesus in all caps. That's always been a hallmark of the chapel ministry. I learned that from our previous pastor, Bill Warwick. We celebrated his life in this room yesterday. His memorial service was held here yesterday. And as I thought about him and the imprint that he left on my life, remember, he's the first extroverted pastor I ever met. When your dad's a pastor, you only have one pastor your whole life, and my dad is not an extrovert, and I am. Like, I couldn't imagine what it would be like to be a pastor. I didn't sense that call until I saw what it looked like when I came to college in Bill's life. And I remember him telling the story that he would tell to so many people when people would say, what is going on out there at the chapel? I mean, like, I'm a Baptist, can I come there? I'm a Presbyterian, can I come? I'm a Methodist, can I come? I'm an Episcopalian, can I come? He'd say, come on. But when you come, make sure you spell Baptist with a lowercase b. And when you come, make sure you spell Presbyterian with a lowercase b. Sure, we have elders, and presbyteros in the Greek means elder. We have elders, but you spell that with a lowercase p, because we have a lot that we agree to disagree about some of that. And you spell Methodist with a lowercase m, because some people prefer John Calvin to John Wesley, but we're all here together. Why? Because we spell Jesus in all caps. And so many believers divide over all of those different things, and then they don't witness to the world the unity of our triune God. And at the chapel, we're trying to do something different. We're trying to spell Jesus in all caps. And so this year, we're going to take a long look at Jesus. Next, we want to take a first look at Jesus. A first look at Jesus. There's another translation to the verse 2 that I want to read from the New English Bible when I think about this idea of a first look at Jesus. New English Bible translates it like this. Our eyes fixed on Jesus, on whom faith depends from start to finish. On whom faith depends from start to finish. I have been asking, what do you fix your eyes on most? I think another good question this morning is, what do you fix your eyes on first? So often Jesus is the last thing that people look to. It's like, I'm at the bottom of the pit and I've tried everything else, and okay. People keep telling me about Jesus. Maybe they have a point. What if we flip that script and Jesus wasn't the last thing we looked to after we exhausted all of our other options? Jesus could be the first thing we look to this year. Next, we might want to take an expectant look at Jesus. Again, verse 2, the second half of verse 2 says this. Jesus, who, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. You see, Jesus expectantly sees beyond what he sees right in front of him. The cross was in front of him, but what did he see instead of the cross? He saw the joy that was beyond the cross, the joy that he could expect when he provided atonement for the sins of the world. Not the pain of the cross, but the joy of building the bridge between God and man that had been ruptured in the rebellion of Adam and Eve. He saw the joy and he scorned the cross. It says that he despised the shame. And what that means, we don't speak like that a lot, despising the shame. What does that mean? It means he counted the shame as of little value. The original language, there's a nuance of he just didn't, he didn't give much weight to it. He expected something beyond it. As we are in the midst of a difficult and painful season, I pray that we would take an expectant look at Jesus. Moses is a great example of this, as the author of Hebrews details. And back in chapter 11, verse 27, listen to this. It says, by faith he, that's Moses, by faith he left Egypt, not being afraid of the anger of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. What helped Moses endure the anger of Pharaoh? He was taking this expectant look. He knew there was something beyond he could see. He endured seeing him who is invisible. May we take an expectant look at Jesus this year. And finally, I pray that we will look at Jesus together. We need to take a look at him together. I'm going to pull all this together and just read Hebrews 12, 1 and 2, the verses that I've been teaching from. But as I read it this time, pay attention to the third person language the author uses. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside. He doesn't say you should lay aside. He says, let us lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely. And let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Before us. You see, so often we're trying to look at Jesus alone. And the author of Hebrews is saying, look at Jesus together. And again, this is the power of the church that can't be mimicked with individual Bible study. As much as I love individual Bible study, God calls his people to gather together, and that's why we're working hard to build new wineskins, because gathering can have some additional complexities right now. But if you are watching online and you are building a hunger to gather again, I say that's a good thing. And it's one of the reasons why we've created the outside service and stream it online, and the inside service and stream it online, and then an online only service, that part of which takes place from the chapel, to build that hunger to look at Jesus together. I've been asking a lot of questions this morning, and here's another one. Who helps you look at Jesus? In your life, who helps you look at him? We may want to start thinking this year about how to carve out some more time to spend with those people. I had a friend who really helped me look at Jesus. All through his life, as I knew him, he helped me look at Jesus. He had a very different personality than me. I tend to have many words. This man had few words, but he could often say more than I could in a paragraph with just a phrase. And he helped me look at Jesus, but especially toward the end of his life. He had cancer. His name was Tex McKinnon. And his widow is still part of our family of faith and joins us this morning. And I did give her a heads up that I had something in my sermon this morning, because it makes me cry. And as he came to the end, his body wasting away, He would always say, Travis, remember 1 Peter 4. And he would always quote 1 Peter 4, verses 12 and 13 to me. Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery trial when it comes upon you to test you, as though something strange were happening to you. But rejoice insofar as you share Christ's sufferings, and that you may also rejoice and be glad when his glory is revealed. Don't be surprised, Travis. You look surprised when you see me wasting away. Why are you surprised? The Bible says, don't be surprised. And the last time I saw him, when he had the ability to speak in his hospital bed, he said, Travis, come here, come close. Don't be surprised at the fiery trials. And so many of us this year have been surprised by the fiery trials. And my friend helped me see Jesus in a new way, telling me, don't be surprised by the fiery trials, because the fiery trials are the way of Jesus. When we walk down the path of fiery trials, we're walking the way of Jesus. The author of Hebrews tells us this in Hebrews chapter 5, verse 8. It makes me marvel at the mystery of the Trinity when I read these words. Although he was a son, this is the author talking about Jesus. Although he was a son, he learned obedience through what was suffered. This is why we fix our eyes on Jesus. It is his way that we are walking. And remember, he is the way, the truth, and the life. One more question. Are you depending on something or someone who has never walked the way of Jesus to lead you in the way of Jesus? Cast that aside. Fix your eyes on him. It's his way, and he is the way. And so, does the glow of a smartphone light your face at night? Is it the fluctuating numbers of the stock market that you check throughout the day? Maybe there's a website you revisit constantly to make sure you don't miss anything. Does your Facebook feed get more time than your family? Or is there a number on a scale you're so desperate to see you check every morning? Has the coronavirus pandemic pushed you to look more at the challenges of the moment than the promises of God for the future? In the midst of all that vies for your eyes, what do you fix your eyes on most? This year, I pray we would take a focused look, a long look, a first look, an expectant look, and most importantly, that we would look at Jesus together. And if you have never fixed your eyes on Jesus before, if you've never placed your faith in him, you can pray right now as the band leads us in this song, helping us turn our eyes upon Jesus. And you can just say, Jesus, I turn my eyes to you in faith. I believe. I've fixed my eyes on the wrong things. I've fixed my eyes on you. And then we'll have a prayer team down front after the service. If you pray that prayer, please come down front. Tell us about it. I'll be in the foyer. Please tell me about it. We can pray with you and help you get connected to a group of people where you can fix your eyes on Jesus together. This year, may we have our eyes fixed on Jesus, the source and goal of our faith.